Welcome to Kikai Runner on the Go. So this is my first episode, and what is it? It's a summary of this month's entries, such as race reports, reviews, how-tos, and etc. So if you're too lazy to read and don't mind the sound of my voice, this is for you. So we're going to go last things first. My most recent race was the Cobra Ironman 70.3 Philippines in Cebu, and this happened about 2 weeks after I did Challenge Roth. I wouldn't say it was a bad idea, but it was a big ask from my body. I was just happy to be healthy after that full Ironman. And, you know, it's different really when you're racing at home, especially, you know, in Cebu. It's the Queen City of the South, and they're really proud of that race. Besides, I was excited to race again with my indoor teammates. You know, it's really lonely when you race overseas and you're the only one from your team. You miss the support, you miss the camaraderie, you miss having someone to eat with sometimes. So while most of the participants from Manila had Friday arrivals, I landed in Cebu on Thursday because I wanted to participate in the Friday morning ride out. And then always Friday is very hectic in Cebu, so I wanted some downtime, which I got when I hung out with some of my other indoor teammates from Cagayan de Oro who had also arrived early. So that ride out on Friday was to Fort San Pedro. Fort San Pedro is like the smallest, oldest triangular bastion fort in the country, and it was a turnaround for the ride. The city, Cebu City, had prepared brunch and a cultural dance number, which everyone enjoyed, especially our foreign participants, including the pros. They really loved it. It was a great bit of color to race festivities. Of course, getting to and from Fort San Pedro was a little bit of an ordeal. I know some people had some mishaps on that ride. I was just thankful to get through it unscathed. You really do need to have good handling skills when you're riding out towards the city. So if, you know, you're an inexperienced rider, if this is your first 70.3, or you haven't really done a lot of riding on open roads, I would suggest that in the future, if you do ride out in Cebu, you ride out towards the run course, towards Punta Engaño. It's a little safer. There aren't as many vehicles. It's not the city center, so you don't have, you know, jeepneys stopping and going and cars coming into your path and all that. So it's much safer. And of course, you know what? You always have to save things, save everything for race day. You don't want to be, you know, on a training ride and then get into an accident and you don't even get to start your race, you know? Okay, so anyway, I came out of it alive, so I registered at the expo, and that expo was very crowded. It was a testament to how many participants were signed up for this race. I mean, 2,400 plus participants, including relays. That's a lot for the Philippines. And yeah, it really got crowded towards the end of the day. But I'm just happy that the triathlon scene in the Philippines is really growing. Okay, so race day, I didn't really have a lot of pressure on me because, yeah, everybody was expecting me to be a little slower because I was just recovering from Challenge Roth, and I didn't expect much from myself as well. I mean, I had a wound on my knee that I was babying, so I didn't want to kick so much on the swim. I was actually afraid that I wasn't going to get through that swim because even my shoulder had a little bit of a ding from Challenge Roth, so I was having a hard time lifting my elbows up. Funny thing is, when the gun start came, it wasn't an issue. So the funny things that your body does when you're full of adrenaline. Yeah, I live for race day. So, you know, once I got through the swim, it was like, game on. So I got onto the bike course, and it was just, I probably got out of the swim along with like 50 other participants, and it was really congested coming out of T1. And I don't know, I just tried my best not to get caught in any draft zones. I didn't know if I had enough in me to push to get ahead of any people, any packs. But I did my best. I didn't really beat my bike PR from last year. Actually, the whole race, it was slow for me, but You know what, really, I really enjoyed every bit of it. Like I actually took time to look down at the seabed and see the seagrass and the corals and all the fish underneath. And then when I got on the bike course, because the bike course was shortened this year and we had to go through that M loop twice, we got to go through all of the spectators lining up on the streets twice as well. And so, you know, I got to embrace all that energy from the crowd, and it was great. I got into T2 in good spirits, and I started my run, and I got out on the run course, and I came upon one of my teammates. I mean, when I passed him, when I tried to pass him, he kept up with me, and so I said, "Hey, man, do you want to run together?" And this was his first half Ironman, so. Yeah, so he did, and you know, 3 kilometers later, he said he wanted to quit, and I was like, no, you stay right beside me. And it was a hot day, it was a tough day. So we just lived from aid station, grabbing water and ice and sponges and cola, even if it was diet, bananas, everything, you know? And I remembered last year, and I told him, okay. On this part of the course, on the second loop, you're going to feel a big drop of energy. Don't let that get to you. Allow yourself time to recover. Focus on what you can control, like your nutrition, your cadence, your footsteps, your breathing, everything like that. And so we, you know, on the last kilometer, and we were like, "Hey, man, we're home free. You know, how many times have you run 1 kilometer?" And he's like, "You go ahead." And I said, "Are you sure?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm going to finish this." And so, you know, I ran ahead. I was trying to chase down this girl who came in 5th in my age group. I couldn't chase her down. It was too little time, too little distance left. And so I crossed. And it was a nice feeling at the finish line. Like, I can't believe I did that, especially after Roth and, you know, after I greeted some people at the finish line, I turned back because I remembered that my teammate was coming in. And you know, when he came in and he was so emotional, wow. It was, you know, I grabbed him, I hugged him, I said, "Hey man, you did it." I remembered last year that I was kind of getting emotional at the finish line, but then there was nobody there to hold me and say, you know, it's all right to cry, it's all right to be emotional. And so I kind of like held it in, and it just didn't feel as massive. And so I let him cry on my shoulder a little bit. I packed up my bike, I went back to the hotel, and it was like, oh, that was so much tougher than last year. But that was a great race, and I'm planning to go back next year because it's a qualifier for the 2016 World Championships for Ironman 70.3, and I want to go there because it's going to be held in Sunshine Coast, Australia. So, yeah, I'm already thinking way ahead, but we'll see what happens. I'm currently in my triathlon off season and just trying to rebuild my body. A full Ironman really takes so much out of you. I can't even begin to tell you what Challenge Roth felt like. Or yeah, I know what it means to me. I mean, it's like the biggest and most major athletic accomplishment of my life. But the day itself, well, yeah, it started out, I started out feeling like it was just any other race because I didn't want to think about, oh, it's a full Ironman. Ah, yeah, I started things out like that. But then, you know, when I ran into Coach Annie before the start, and we started putting on our wetsuits, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. And then when the gun sounded and those buoy lines came up, and I had to put my head in the water. You know, when you're inexperienced and you get caught in that fray of a start line, you do tend to panic. So I tried to calm myself down. Exhale into the water, breathe in, breathe out, just find your rhythm. And I did have a rhythm for the first 200 meters, but then my body just rebelled against me, and I had a hard time breathing. So you have two choices, really, when you're in that situation. Either you get out of the water and say, "I'm done," or you do something that helps you cope, that gets you through that, portion of the race. And I remembered my first triathlon in open water when I had some trouble breathing, when I actually completed the whole thing, the whole swim leg with backstroke. And I remembered how I got myself back on track on the bike, and then, you know, ran myself up into second place. That was a mini sprint in 2011. And so I thought the same thing here. Okay, let's just get through this. It's going to be slow and it's going to be clumsy, but as long as I get in, and I mean, as long as I get out of the water to beat the cutoff for the swim, then I'm back in the game. And so that's what I did. And you know, the funny thing is, I was swimming in a straighter line doing backstroke than I was swimming with a front crawl. Anyway, I exited the water about 17 minutes past my expected swim finish, but I was out of the water, so I was back in the game. I got on the bike, I put on some arm warmers, a bike jersey, because I knew I was going to get cold on the bike. I don't necessarily race at high intensities, especially if I'm new to the distance. So I was just trying to get through the whole 180 kilometers without, you know, passing out. So I was doing pretty well in the first 40 kilometers. I had been forewarned about this big climb called the Kalvarian Berg. Everybody talks about the Solar Hill climb, but nobody actually tells you that there's a climb earlier in the race. So I knew it was coming. And so when it came, I just ground up the hill in my lightest gear and grabbing nutrition, and I was fine. And then, you know, after completing that climb, which takes 15 minutes, I think, for the pros to negotiate, for us it may take much longer. Finally, we got into a bit of a downhill. And so I got into my big chain ring. I started pushing my pedals. I got into my aero position. And then this downhill starts becoming technical. So I get back onto my hoods and, you know, I'm steering the bike down those curves. There are about three of them. And so I was coming down onto the last, or the second to the last curve. And I was like, ah, yes. You know, I made it, and all this training in the Philippines with our technical downhills is really paying off. And all of a sudden, I start hearing from behind me this screaming and screeching brakes and skidding tires. And without even looking at the trajectory of the person behind me, I just, you know, the thought just crossed my mind. He's going to hit my front wheel. And the guy did just clip my front wheel. I keep thinking now that if I had, you know, been a little faster, he would have hit me. He would have T-boned me directly onto my body. I might have broken a leg, but he just clipped my front wheel. And so I just lost balance. I skidded across the road, of course, skinning my knee and my elbow. But on the whole, I was able to continue my race. I briefly considered not going through with the race because I was just so scared that, you know, if I get this 180-kilometer bike ride done, then I have to do a marathon. Am I going to be able to run a marathon? But I said, okay, let's just get to the next aid station. If I feel bad, if I feel woozy, maybe then I'll quit. I got to the next aid station, and I felt great. And so I kept cycling until finally reached transition two. I was like, okay, so you've done the swim, which you had trouble with, and then you've done the bike you had trouble in. But if you don't get on the marathon and at least try to give this a go, then all of that was for nothing. And then you'll have to do another full distance again because you'll now have this monkey on your back. So yeah, I laced up. I got out there. I got running. I was doing pretty well. I was kind of amazed and surprised that I didn't feel any pain from my knee. But then, you know, physical was fine, but you get into the mental, and that's a whole different ball game. I was okay, and then it started raining, and this was really a depressing kind of rain. It just drip, 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 drip. It wasn't sheets of rain, which I'm more used to in the Philippines, but it was just this kind of a hard drizzle. It got me down, and I started walking because I was like, "Oh, it's such a long way to go. I can walk here. I can just, rest a little bit." And I got demoralized, and it didn't help that I had some nutritional problems earlier in the marathon. So I just kept going from aid station to aid station, drinking cola and, having some water. I kept thinking to myself, you are going to recover from this. Just wait. You're going to find your legs again and just wait. And finally, at a certain aid station, I think it was kilometer 27 or 28, they started serving hot soup. And when I drank that hot soup, it was wow. I can't believe I have something warm in my belly for the first time in I don't know how many hours, like I think it was 12 hours. I didn't even have a hot breakfast that morning. So it wasn't really a physical thing, because I think I had more calories from cola than I did from the soup, but it was more of a mental thing. Like, I can do this. I really can do this. And so I started running again, and then I just kept going and thinking, I can't stop now. I had been looking at my watch throughout the whole marathon and thinking, man, I have to beat 15 hours. And eventually I realized that I could come in under 14 hours if I could just keep going. And so I did. Finally ran back into Roth Town, and the people were there lining the streets, and I saw the big guy for Challenge Family, Felix. He was on his way towards the finish line, so I had actually managed to catch up and then ran along the streets, and there was this guy drinking a beer. I just felt like celebrating. So I asked for a sip, and he gave it to me, and that elicited a big cheer from the crowd. The Germans love their beer, they're very proud of it. And so I pulled out the Philippine flag. It had been in my back pocket the whole time. And it was one of the reasons why I felt I couldn't quit the marathon, because, I'd brought that flag all the way from home. I'd run with it for so long on the marathon, and then just to cut out and to quit and not fly it across the finish line, that would be such a big waste. And so, yeah, that's one of the proudest moments of my life. I ran into the stadium. They have this huge stadium that they build just for the race. They build it every year, they take it down every year. And so I ran to the stadium with flying the flag, and I was torn between, I love this moment, can we extend it a little bit further? And oh, my legs are so bad. I can't believe we're almost done. I can't wait for this to be over. And so finally, I get to the finish arch, and I run across the finish line into the arms of my homestay, my host. Thank you so much, Mona. That was a great finish. I only wish I wasn't as tired. I could have actually stayed for the rest of the festivities. They do at 10:30, they sent up some fireworks. There were opera singers singing, and very emotional finish for the last few ones across the finish line. I was just so tired. I picked up my bike, went home. But yeah, Roth was amazing. And if there was ever any race that you would want your first Ironman to be at, it would be Roth. And then it would set the bar so high up. You don't know if you really want to do any other race, any other Ironman race for that matter. I really need to thank the people who helped me on that Challenge Roth journey. First of all, Raymond Magdaluyo. I mean, I really don't know how I can ever repay you for all you've done. Thank you for taking me on my first few triathlons overseas, for valuing my input, for being a friend, for actually challenging me to do it. Like you said before, I don't know if you can do it. I don't know if you can do it. And you know that that's one of the things that motivates me, being told I can't do it. I also want to thank Dave Voth from Challenge Philippines. Without your hand in all this, I wouldn't even have considered going to Roth in the first place. I want to thank Jerry Santos from SIPO. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that my triathlon journey has progressed by leaps and bounds since we started working together. Thank you for the opportunity to use the SIPO Mamba frame. It was really, such a comfortable ride. I also want to thank Mizuno Philippines. I mean, thank you for the continued support from 2010, and onwards. It's been amazing support, and I'm just glad to continue working with you and being part of such an amazing brand. Thank you, Greg Banzon and Century Tuna. I mean, thank you for allowing me to share my Challenge Roth dream with you, and thank you for being part of my journey. Mikey and Janina Dairit of Cascos, you've given me access to some amazing brands that have helped me immediately during my training and racing. Anthony Kirov, thank you, Box. Who would have known that day we did our first sprint triathlon in Subic that we'd still be in this sport years later? I also want to thank Coach Annie and Arland. I mean, you both paved the way for the rest of us in the Philippine triathlon scene, and you've set such high standards. Thank you for, being a comforting presence there in Roth. Me knowing that I'm not alone and that there are two other people waiting for me at the finish line. That was, that just felt like coming home. I want to thank my family for always being supportive about my sporty endeavors from my first marathon up till now. I also want to thank Chris McCormack and Aaron Franklin from MacaX. I mean, guys, thanks for the writing gigs that helped fund all my training expenses for Roth. And Chris, thank you for saying these four words, "You have to come," back when I was kind of considering not going. Thanks. It was a great race. I don't regret doing it at all. And even though my next Ironman might be many years in the future, I'll always, always cherish my memories of Challenge Roth. Okay, so I'm going to answer an Ask Kikai Runner question now. This comes in from Ian Jimenez Michano. He asks, how can an average Joe with an average day job and competent fitness level, but no teammates, no sponsors, and not enough money to burn, train for, and even finish just a half Ironman without blowing his savings and or losing his job? Man, you're already talking yourself out of it even before you decide on it. Also, Gibran John Henson asks, how much does it cost to join a race? I believe that people from many walks of life can complete a half Ironman on a budget. All it takes is some planning and saving. Not having enough money to burn, that phrase, it's actually relative. It really depends on what your priorities are in life. But here are some things to consider before putting a half Ironman on your year's racing schedule. The first thing you really need to consider is the total cost of training. So this is a hidden cost that most people don't think about, but it can actually add up to quite a lot. Now, think about your transportation to and from your training venues, your pool fees, your food and drink, your equipment upkeep, like for instance, bike tune-ups or packing your bike or those kinds of things. I mean, consider where you can cut costs and where you need to spend. For example, I never needed to pay for pool use because the place I live in has a 25-meter pool that I can use for free. I also saved a lot of money on transportation for bike training by doing most of my bike sessions on an indoor trainer at home. I limited myself to one long ride a week at New Valley, which I was happy to pay the toll fees and gas money for. It still added up to quite a lot, so I know I can actually save by doing more of my rides in places I don't have to pay toll fees to or not so far away from where I live. Okay, so aside from the total cost of training, you also have to determine how much time you can set aside for training and set your goals accordingly. Work, family, sleep. Yes, you have to count sleep. These will take up the bulk of your time, and how much is left is what you'll have to work with. Yeah, don't skip out on work just because you need to train. That's a bad idea. In general, you won't need as much training time if your goal is just to finish than if you have a specific time target in mind. Now, another thing to think about is you need to choose your race wisely. So you can get caught up in those big international brands that have come in, but there are homegrown races out there of the same distance, not as expensive. They have great support from the local government and have year in, year out given triathletes a memorable race experience. Okay, speaking of local races, you do need to keep it local if you want to save. The less you need to travel for a race, the kinder to your wallet it will be. Driving or carpooling to a triathlon will always be cheaper than taking a plane. If you carpool, you can actually split toll and fuel costs, which will really help you save even further. Another thing to think about is saving up for the registration fee. A lot of the half Ironmans that we have here in the Philippines, this is not their first year, so you already have an idea of how much the registration fees are for each of these races. So if you know that registration opens for a certain race in October, then you're going to count back several months and divide the registration fee by how many months you've counted back, and then save just that amount each month, and then you will have enough for registration when it opens. Okay, and then just to spread your costs out before the actual race date, you can book your accommodation in advance. If possible, find a roommate. Because the closer to race date you book where you're staying, the more likely the price will be jacked up due to demand. After all, it's not just you who's racing. There may be about 200 to 300 athletes in town with their friends and families also in need of a place to stay. Now, when you have a roommate or two or three, this will allow you to split the cost of the room so the financial burden is much smaller. The last thing you need to think about before signing up for a half Ironman is, don't worry about not having the latest and greatest bike or GPS watch or shoes or any other gadgets or thingamajigs. You can complete a half Ironman on a road bike. My GTS bike Loki from last year, it cost 23,000 pesos second hand before any of my improvements on it. And you can also race just using the stopwatch function on a digital watch. And you can really save by buying last season's running shoes. They still work well, and you can grab them from outlet stores at a discounted price. Because really, what's important is the engine, and that's you. Now, I've actually quantified the cost of Racing Challenge Philippines, and it's still a sizable amount of money. And you must really want to do a half Ironman to justify spending this much. But here's a reminder, you don't need to do a half Ironman to be a triathlete. Triathlons are held across varying distances, from the very short mini sprints up to the ultra distance full Ironmans. You are a triathlete if you've swum, biked, and run in one go. So if you're thinking about how to save money while still participating in triathlons, well, the registration fee and training costs to doing Olympic distance triathlons is lower than that for a half Ironman. If you're very budget conscious, you can still challenge yourself in triathlon at the shorter distances. For gear reviews, I did a review of Zensa compression wear on the blog. And I've been using Zensa since June for post-race recovery from the Century Tuna 5150 and decided to use arm and calf sleeves for Challenge Roth and then calf sleeves for Ironman 70.3 Philippines. In long distance races, I feel that I definitely benefit from compression to delay the onset of my fatigue, and I'm less likely to cramp. I've seen this firsthand. I didn't use any compression in Challenge Philippines, which has a ridiculous bike course, and I cramped so hard on the bike and the run. But I didn't feel that cramping in Challenge Roth or in Ironman 70.3 Philippines, so I think I can credit compression for that. Also, when I use compression overnight after a tough session, oh, my legs just feel fresher in the morning. The Zensa stuff is really comfortable to wear. They're seamless, so they don't chafe. What I really, really like using are the calf sleeves. I know they're thicker in comparison to the other compression gear, but I don't feel the difference once I have them on. I think they're really breathable. Because even in the high temperatures at Cebu, I had no problems with being too warm while wearing them. You guys might also want to check out your Mizuno stores. I think the Wave Sayonara now has a new colorway out, so check it out. And one last thing before I end this episode, I want to talk about the Cordillera Great Traverse. This is actually set to happen in 2015, and it involves a few of my friends who are into ultramarathons and trail running, so I'm really proud of them. It's going to connect the six provinces of the Cordillera Administrative Region. They're going to start from Sagada and pass through Abra, Kalinga, Apayao, Ifugao, Benguet, and finally ends in Baguio City, which is around, this distance is around 400 kilometers with 100,000 meters of elevation gain and loss. It's pretty hardcore. And it's supposed to rival the best trekking destinations in the world. So the CGT team is currently in its planning stages right now. It's July to October 2014. The Traverse itself is planned for April 2015. For more information about this, you can go to cordilleragreattraverse.com. And if you'd like to support the CGT financially or in kind, please email them at marketing@cordilleragreattraverse.com. Now, I'm really looking forward to following their journey over the next few months. Anyway, that's it for our first Kika Runner on the Go podcast episode. I hope you've enjoyed listening to my voice. I hope I haven't put you to sleep. Till next month, thanks for listening.